start with who you are, and I'll make sure that this thing is working.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm Catherine Carlton Hartshorn. I was born in Warren, and I was married in the same house 21 years later.
Is that right?
And the house still looks just as it did years ago.
Which house is it?
It's on Route 100, about a mile and a half from the village toward Granville, going south. It's a gray house.
Oh.
The barns are all gone, but the house looks about the same as
yeah.
it always did. Yeah, my grandfather bought it in 1901 or 1902.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, who was your grandfather?
William Carlton.
William Carlton.
And Myra Boyce Carlton. And I lived with them after my mother died when I was 13. So they and my aunt and uncle, Leon and Goldie Taylor, brought me up. So she was always my mom. But I lived with my grandparents and my aunt and uncle till I got married. And then I moved south about three houses and ran the school bus after the kids were born. Taught school as a substitute for about 15 years. After I quit teaching regularly. And I was the first one to teach visual education. We had a projector that we used for the Odd Fellows to show movies. And I used to get my movies from Fitzpatrick, Reverend Fitzpatrick in Montpelier. He's my lawyer now, his son is my lawyer now. And I'd go from one school to the other. We only had two schools in town, one in East Warren and one in the village. And I'd show the pictures in the village, then I go to East Warren on a Friday. I think the kids like my class better than anybody else's.
I bet.
And lots of mornings I'd come down running the school bus with my slacks on and boots and everything. The kids would come running out. Mrs. Hartshorn, you going to teach until the teacher comes? She can't get here. So I'd have to go in and get things rolling till I didn't get paid for it, but but at least I went in.
Now, did your grandparents have a small farm there?
A very small. I can't remember his grandpad. Maybe he had 10 cows at a time, but I don't remember. But I used to go to the creamery with him when they had the creamery in Warren Village and ride down with him. He'd take his cream down. We used the mill. And then when I got married, we had one cow always for the babies. And I made my own butter during the Depression, during the war, my own butter and my own cottage cheese. We had our own syrup and raised our own vegetables and canned all our own meat. So you see, we got along pretty good.
What kind of meat did you can?
Beef and pork. We always had our own pig and our own beef. Always raised a bull calf or a beef every year. And we always had a big garden. I've canned as much as 60 quarts of dandelion greens, 60 to 80 quarts of dandelion greens.
God.
And we ate them all. I can't understand how we did, but we did. Say nothing about the string beans and the carrots. And I canned carrots because I didn't like them in the sand. Our cellar was damp and they didn't keep good. But I wouldn't like canned meat now. It don't taste good.
Well,
You're used to fresh meat now, you know.
That's right.
I never milked the cow only once, and that was one when we had a big, big snowstorm. My husband was gone for 2 days, and I had to have milk for the baby. Well, I got a cup of milk, and I quit, and so did the cow.
How many children do you have?
Four.
Four. Oh, dear.
But the baby got enough milk for one bottle anyway.
Oh dear.
And of course the kids had to walk to school then, and that was before Route 100 was plowed very good. It was plowed by the state, but not like it is now, and it wasn't sanded or anything, you know. So my first two children walked to school bundled up. I don't know how they ever walked. They were bundled up so much. And then when my others came along, I drove them to school. Drove a school bus, and I had three different trips in the morning. And I'd have to put chains on, go up a hill, come back down, take the chains off, and then do the same thing again at night. I guess I could do it pretty good. 10 minutes, and I was all done.
I would say that was good.
Yeah.
good for chains.
Yeah. And before I went to my grandparents, I lived in the village, just where you go into Warren Village from the north, in that house on the right there. It's a small house now, but it used to be a big two-tenement house. And where the road is, there was four big barns. I saw a picture of them the other day, right where they were. We're located there. And all the kids in the village used to come down there to play because we had plenty of land to run over and didn't bother anybody. Sliding in the winter was beautiful up on the flat. Yeah. But the state changed it all when they moved the road bypass the village.
So originally the road went through the village?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to be able to get on my sled there at home and slide down and slide up the next hill. Take my sled to school, and then I could slide clear down almost home.
Gosh.
That was no cars.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Just to watch out for horses. And I used to go down to Gristmill and watch them grind grain down there. That was right near our house.
Now, was that Edna?
Edna and Bradley.
Bradley's.
Yeah. And the fellow that worked there, Gene Thayer, had to turn the electric lights on every night, every morning, and turn them off every night. He got sick and couldn't do it, so I was, I couldn't have been more than 7 or 8 years old. And so my brother and I used to go up and turn the lights on and off for him. And then we'd go down, wash his dishes, and get him something to eat. He was a bachelor that lived down. So I always said I helped turn the street lights on anyway.
Now, when did the lights first come in?
I don't remember.
Because I know that East Warren didn't get electricity till 1940.
Well, we didn't. I lived for 16 years on Route 100 with no electricity, no telephone.
At your grandparents?
No, at my own house.
Oh.
Yeah, we didn't get electricity until just before we moved to the village. We moved to the village in 1961, I think, or something. No, 51, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
My son was just going to enter school, my youngest at that time. And my husband was a state highway patrolman driving the truck, and he had to be where he had telephone. We didn't have a telephone.
Oh my gosh.
We had to move to the village. We sold our other house, moved to the village. And we had our own truck for patrol. State has their own now, but we had our own truck, which was good. Something broke down, he went and got it fixed. With a state truck, you had to take it in Montpelier, and they fixed one little thing. Maybe the next day something else would break down.
And you said you've lived on three sides.
So. Yeah. I lived on the south side, going south out of the village, and I lived on the north side, and then I'm up here.
But you're not going to go on...
I'm not going the other side. No, I don't want to live in Sugar Bush. And that's about what it would be to get on that side.
I guess that's right. Well, there aren't very many natives that...
That are
live
on
over
that
there.
Side. No, most all of them. In fact, I think they all are new ones. Reasonably new, you know. Somebody said you got Henry Perkins.
No, I haven't been there yet, but I am going to go.
Claudia said she interviewed him, had a good interview with him.
Good.
Yeah. And then after I was married, second time, I married Milton Peatman and in 63, and we built this log cabin up here.
Uh-huh.
I sold out down there. I haven't been sorry. But my son lives down there. He owns the land up back, and he's got a silo for a house. He bought a silo and built it into a house. I said, you don't know what you're doing. When you get to be 70 years old, you wish you didn't have all those stairs. But it is unique. And he is a nut on, I call him, rusty cars. But he does. He goes to auctions. He goes down to Pennsylvania and Hershey every year. And he's always looking out for buttons for me, because in 1977, I went into the button business.
Well, I was going to ask you how long you've been.
Well, these are nothing. I have collector's items in the bedrooms.
Gosh.
And I've been at that. I belong to New Hampshire State and Massachusetts State, the National, and I did belong to some other state. I guess I belonged to Connecticut at one time. And then we have a club in New Hampshire I belong to. And then we have a club in Vermont I belong to.
Gosh.
So I at least have two meetings every month.
Oh my gosh.
And I just came back Saturday from one in White River.
Well, were there many mills other than still going? When did the mills sort of...
They all went out in 1927. Mills and dams, yeah. I was in school, and that was before I was 13. And I got across the bridge at the north end of the village just before the water really went across. And there was a big, the brook up above was a regular river, went between our house and barn. Couldn't even get to the barn to take care of the cows.
Gosh.
Just too swift, you know, just coming down the hill there now. Yeah, and I'd been in all the mills. There was a mill up the river that I used to go down to. The man that owned it boarded it, my grandfather's house, for years. And Elwin Neal's father owned it.
Which mill was that?
Goodale Neal's mill.
Goodale Neal?
Goodale and Neal.
And that was Clabbard's, or was that?
Lumber mill.
Lumber mill.
Lumber mill, yeah. And then there was the Bradley mill. I never saw the Austin mill way up the river running. I think that was damaged before that. But the Bowen and Hunter mill, which is dirt road now, seeing various changes there. And when the old road used to go down around, the road goes now to the right-hand side of the river and used to go to the left.
Oh, it did?
And had a bridge across. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't look like room there now.
No.
But there was.
I was noticing that the other day.
But there was. Mm-hmm.
And that was bobbins.
Yeah. Mostly bobbins. And Parker and Ford had it after that. And then...
Where was the Parker and Slayton mill?
Where that funny-looking house is now, right in back of Coda's.
You mean Don Coda's?
Mm-hmm. That was Brooks's mill, and before that it was went clear back to Parker and Slayton and Wakefield and those. Yeah. And then there's a Brigham that was in between, and he run it for a while. I think he made specialty products more than than Brooks did.
Now, was that Brooks, Ruth Brooks's father?
No.
Uncle?
No. Her husband have been her husband's cousin, but they weren't any closer than that anyway. I don't know whether Henry's wife is still alive or not. Last I knew, she was in a nursing home in Northfield. She could have died, I haven't heard. Because she didn't know where she was, the last I knew, so. And her and Henry Brooks's son became a doctor. Dr. Brooks was the head of the Waterbury State Hospital for quite some time. My daughter-in-law worked for him. I don't know what happened to his brother. I never knew those. I worked for Mrs. Lamorda, Miss Lamorda, she was. And her brother was a mail carrier for a number of years. The first job I ever had was washing dishes and helping her make beds for summer visitors.
I think Bob Gove and Clesson, Irish, and Elwyn Neal
stayed at Mrs. Lamorda's.
Yeah,
we stayed down the house, a couple houses below, and boarded ourselves for a while. And then we went with the teacher, Mrs. Chapman, stayed with her. Funniest part of it was Ruth and I, as kids, were right near each other. And I spent more time at her house than I did at home, or else she was over to my house. And then when we went to high school together, we roomed together. Then when we went to college, we roomed together again.
Yes, that's nice.
And we got married within a week of each other.
Is that right?
Yeah. I didn't know she was going to be married. I was up to her school the night before Christmas party. And I said, Ruth, I'm getting married tomorrow. You want to come? And so she came out. She's the only outsider there. It was a very small wedding at home. And in the process, she must have told her brother because they stole her car and took it to the town line and left it. we didn't find it for quite some time. And so she was, we were both Rebecca's, belonged to Rebecca's society. And she was supposed to put on a party for me when I came back. Well, they had to change the ideas because they had to make it a double party.
Oh,
we were always together. The two boys used to come and get us at college.
Oh, that's nice.
Always room. So her brothers were my brothers. And to this day, I bet you'll find people that can't tell which one is Barney and which one is the Carlton.
Well, I was asking her about George Greenslip, just as I have been asking you about Arthur
Hartshorne.
And I have been impressed with sort of the musical talent,
mm-hmm.
and the writing of poetry and the writing, mm-hmm. of songs in Warren.
Mm-hmm.
I've
got two or three poems that I wrote somewhere.
Really?
About different people in town. You know, this one and
the other one.
I'm
very interested in that kind of stuff because it also, usually
they sound kind of crazy when I read them now. When I listen to the tape on the poems that I made up for the people in the Department of Agriculture that I had to get up parties for, I made up a poem for each one of them, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
And I tape those.
How smart of you.
Yeah.
What kind of a guy was Arthur Hartshorne?
Well, he was a radical in, as far as politics are concerned. He spent half his life down at the State House, I think.
I know he lived near Montpelier.
And he had good, yeah, his wife had TB. And they moved to this little camp up on Sunset Avenue. And he was a carpenter. And he kept making it better and better and better. And they finally ended up there. You'd never know now. It's all surrounded by new buildings and everything. But she lived to be quite old. Fresh air did that for her, you know. But he wasn't around here after he grew up. When he was young. He once preached a funeral sermon. One of their friends got drunk and they took him clear up here to the devil's pulpit. And he preached a funeral sermon from the devil's pulpit. That's the joke that they're always telling about him, you know.
Did the friend wake up?
I don't know. Never heard anything more, but that's the story that went around.
And where's the devil's pulpit?
Up here on Lincoln Mountain.
Oh, that's fine.
My line goes just to it. I don't know whether it hits it or not.
Is it a big rock?
Oh, a big, big rock. I wish the Forest Service would cut it out around it, you know, put devil's pulpit sign on it, you know.
Yeah, that's another thing I'm interested in is place names, because
mm-hmm.
it often tells the history of, or indicates the history of a place.
When I was living in the village, the kids down the village didn't know anybody up here in Lincoln Gap, used to be called South Hollow then, or anybody in East Warren, or up Muzzle Hill, or up any of those places. But my uncle belonged to the Woodsmen of America, and they had meetings in Waitsfield and Warren at the houses. And so I used to go with them to these meetings. So I met these people, so I knew different people in town. If they belonged to Modern Woodman. And he also worked for a lot of farmers, and I used to go and stay overnight with the kids at those farmhouses. I got acquainted with the Laros that way.
Jack Laro in East Warren.
Yeah. And the house where they lived was the house that my grandparents lived in before they bought down here in 1901.
And I guess that burned.
Yes, it did. Yeah, with a forest fire. Yeah, they had a big forest fire up there. So I remember going to those Woodman meetings. We had a horse called Phyllis. My aunt and I would go up, meet my uncle, and wherever he was working, pick him up, you know. Then when we came home about 2 o'clock in the morning, that horse was ready to go home. Those old sleigh bells jingled something terrific down through. Expected we woke everybody up. No problem getting that horse home.
Well, this road, it's been a tough road, and it still is, in that it's closed in the wintertime.
And not safe to even try to keep it open. In fact, the wrecker was up. Well, you can go up about a mile, and then you want to quit. You can't turn around. But even though it's closed, people will come over and they'll still get stuck up there. Until now, the wrecker refuses to go. He says it's closed and I'm not insured to do it. I'm not going.
I don't blame him. I know even when it's open, when I used to work in Montpelier, mm-hmm. and it's 10 miles shorter going home this way, yeah. but 20 minutes longer.
I hate McCullough Turnpike, though.
I live in Ripton, so I go the other way.
When I go to Burlington in the summertime, it's a lot shorter this way. And I don't mind it because I learned to drive on that mountain. I remember when I got my license in Montpelier, they had that hill there beside the state house. And he told me to park it. And I said, well, I'll pull the brake on if you'll pull it off, because I cannot release that brake. And I said, well, I don't worry about starting on this hill. I started on Lincoln Mountain plenty of time.
Well, Earl Fuller talked about driving a load of school kids over to see a circus or elephants or something. Mm-hmm. But that must have been quite a trip.
Must have been, yeah. Because now the mountain's lower than it used to be. They cut off the very top of it.
Oh, really?
When I first traveled it, we had a Model T, and you could not drive up. You had to back up. The way the gas tank was, you know, to get the gas into it.
Darn.
They took a good amount off the top of it.
By blasting?
Yeah. The long trail now, the road used to be almost halfway up to where the long trail goes up now.
Now, as far as I can understand, the long trail has always drawn tourists to the area.
Well, it does now. You can go up there most any time. You'll find 25 or 30 cars there on a weekend. A lot of them get broken into, too, even though they're locked up and nothing, you know, nothing that you can see in them. But I won't go on the long trail anymore. I used to always go once a year. But now that so many go, it's just like a boulevard going through, you know. We used to meet maybe one person. And now you'll meet 15, 16 every little ways.
Well, Klessen was talking about how they always used to mm-hmm. hike it. And it sounds like a number of people that lived here used to.
Well, that was the thing, was to go up on the top of Potato Hill. Pictures after pictures of the top of Potato Hill at various times. I even found some way back when my uncles used to be young and go up there, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah. But not now. It's outsiders now.
Well, it's all Sugarbush, I guess.
No.
No?
No, that's not in Sugarbush. Potato Hill's not in Sugarbush.
It's not?
No.
Potato Hill we see from the other side.
It's right up here.
Yeah, it's also Mount Abraham,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
Why was it called?
And Mount Ellen is in Warren. Glen Ellen isn't, but Mount Ellen is.
I'll be darned. Now, why was it called Potato Hill?
I think Algonquin means potatoes. That's the story I heard. Now, I don't know.
And it was originally called?
It's an Indian name. Somewhere I read the other day how Mount Abraham got named, but I can't remember where I read it. I can't remember just what it was now.
It wasn't Abraham Lincoln then.
No. This Hank's Peak too, but that's understandable.
Hanks,
this was all settled by Hankses here.
Yeah.
And Randolph had a lot of Hankses too. There was quite an item in the paper the other day about a Hanks settled over there, and I think he was a brother of this Hanks. Because it was about the same time that they were both settled.
Well, there's no question there's been a lot of changes.
Well, a lot of them. When you stop and think, it used to be so muddy you couldn't get to Waitsfield. Get down there, you stayed, you know. We still have mud up here. I still got about a mile of it. Last year I was in Florida in April, and it's a good thing I was, because the road was almost impassable on that mile.
Up at Bob Gobes today.
Yeah.
You know, get a little frost bit, was yeah, coming out of the more, ground yeah. and the sunshine.
Must have been warmer down there than it was up here. Then.
Yeah, I think yeah. it was.
Because I walked over the road and it wasn't opening up too much.
Well, one of the things I was going to ask you was, do you remember any major events or...
Well, our big major event was our Thanksgiving dinner. The whole family got together at my grandmother's. And that was a big event. And I carried it on here with my kids up until three years ago. I'd have 26, 29 Gosh. People in this room eating. We moved everything out. I can't now. I can't move this couch out. But we had two big tables that we put in here, and they got their food and came in here and sat down. And then my granddaughter in Waitsfield took it over, and she had it 2 years. And then my grandson's wife wanted it in Duxbury, so she had it this last year. She had a wedding before. My great-granddaughter got married. And then the next day we had the family get together. And I think she had about the same number, too, but they've got a big room, so it wasn't crowded at all.
Now, what kind of meal would your grandparents have for Thanksgiving? Has it changed much over the years?
I can't ever remember having turkey at my grandmother's. I don't think we had turkey too much. She didn't buy them. You know, they weren't available to buy unless they were fresh ones. Somebody raised them around yeah. here or something. So we probably had meat and had beef and pork. And my grandmother always had a pork pie. And rice pudding, and custard pie, and all kinds of things, meat, potatoes, all vegetables, you know. We never had our we had our rice pudding. Clarence and I had ours on Christmas morning while the kids were opening their gifts. Because to me, rice in the morning, I don't want it any other time. And we did the same thing, only when I had it here, everybody brought their own dish of whatever, and I furnished the turkey and the pickles and, you know, the sort of things like that. Yeah, but not having a dishwasher is a job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. And so the girls are doing the same thing.
That's neat.
We usually call up each other and ask, what are you taking, so you don't take everything. Because I had the Button Club meets here in August, and we'd heard the horror story of everybody taking baked beans to a party. And so we decided we would tentatively make our own menu. And let me tell you, we have a feast out here on the porch.
That must be great. Was your grandmother a good cook?
I think so. Earlier, when I remember her the most, she had bad knees, and she didn't do much of the cooking. My aunt did it. She, for years, all she could do, she could get around, but I mean she couldn't walk too much. She would shell the peas and cut the string beans and pick over the strawberries, you know, and things like that. Wash my grandfather's neck every week. Cut his hair once in a while if it needed it, and he hadn't been to the barber shop. But outside of that, Graham was very inactive on account she had great big knees. They bothered her terribly. But she made quilts, was always sewing, always doing something. But I imagine probably in her younger days she was very active. She must have had, because she had five children.
Well,
and grandchildren were always there.
It looks like you probably inherited some of her skill with your rugs. And did she make rugs as well?
Yes, she made rugs out of cotton. I can't remember if she ever hooked rugs or not. I don't think so, because I learned to hook rugs by a woman that came up from New York.
Mm-hmm.
With the old hook.
Mm-hmm.